The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
How you doing, Katie?
Oh, you know. Oh, my God. Every time.
Say it together now. Oh, you know.
I'm doing pretty good. A little tired today, as we discussed. Yeah. A little sleepy. I'm a sleepy bear.
It's a good day for it.
It was a good day to be sleepy, but I still had to do all of my things, and that was very frustrating. I also didn't plan today, last night, well.
Oh, yeah.
So it just, the whole day was ruined by being woken up early, and then a bad plan, and then I had to work out. I didn't want to work out, but I told myself I was going to. I didn't have to. No one's, like, making me. I'm trying to, like, take care of myself. Let me be very clear here.
You did the thing.
But I did the thing. I did the thing. Mm-hmm. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm okay. I also had a weird day, just like you. I've spent the entire day in bed because my muscles are in so much pain from my COVID booster shot that I got last night.
Yeah, you have a reason. Mm-hmm. There's something happened to you. I happened to me. It's different. It's a little different.
I think we're all allowed to have those days. I'm kind of glad it was a cold, rainy, gloomy day, because I was like, oh, what a perfect day to just be literally laying in bed all day.
Truly, it was a good day for that. Watched National Treasure with Gabe.
Oh, very nice.
So good.
How did he like it?
Oh, he loved it. And it's I love those movies. Yeah. So that was exciting.
Nice. Before we get into the topic today, because you have a long one for us.
I do. I do indeed.
We have a couple of housekeeping things. Yes. Obviously, we have some patrons.
Some shout outs.
Some shout outs to give. But before we do that, I meant to do this during the last episode and I forgot. So we know that there were quite a few people online who were upset at the way that the pathologist thing was worded about treating the gunshot wounds and stuff like that.
Yes.
Katie was reading from her source. That's how they stated it. We have a comment from someone on Instagram, Answer to Silence. That's their handle.
Solid fucking username.
Yes, I love it. They explained it in a way that I think will help just make it a little more clear for people.
Yes.
That, like, yes, we understand that pathologists work with gunshot wounds and that these pathologists just were not prepared for that.
Yeah.
So here's their comment clarifying. The forensic medical professionals who should have done the autopsy in Texas would also have been pathologists. Pathologists can have separate additional training for forensics, and they are specifically the doctors who are allowed to become medical examiners. Some pathologists only study disease in living patients, which I'm confident was true of the naval pathologists.
Yep.
But there is a large subset of pathologists who are very familiar with gunshot wounds, etc. And yes, that is true. The pathologists who were working on the autopsy of JFK just were not those.
Yeah.
Were not those kinds of pathologists.
I don't mean to, like, focus too much on my, like, with my autism and everything, but when I'm discussing two specific pathologists, you can usually assume that what I'm saying about people just applies to those two people and not pathologists as a whole. there have been a couple times where people have been like, the wording on that is weird. I take a lot of quotes just directly from sources. So if you have any questions about wording, please let us know. And we are happy to clear that up for you guys, for you all.
I remember when we got that comment and I said to Katie, I was like, look at this comment. This explains what your source was trying to describe, like,
yep,
in such a way that anyone can understand.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love when people explain something to me like I'm five, because I need that all the time.
I feel that.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the whole purpose of this podcast, is learning together.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So don't ever be, if you have more information or want more information, don't ever feel weird about talking to us about it. Yeah. If you like come at us about something, that's different. But if you just like have some conversations with us, yeah. So shout outs, more better things.
But we love that comment from that person on Instagram. So thank you very much for that. So our shout outs today for Patreon begin with Mary Beth B. Hello, Mary Beth.
I fucking love that name.
It's a great name. Thank you so much for joining us. We love having you here.
Next is Kevin and Taz. Excellent, excellent spelling of the name Kevin, I might add. And Taz is not their actual legal last name, but better yet, a shout out to their pet. So I would like to say hello directly to Taz. You are so good. You're so good.
I love you. And next we have Amy A. Thank you for joining us, Amy A.
Thank you, Amy. I love the alliteration. It's my favorite.
Yes, me too.
It's so great. Thank you all for your support. It's huge. I feel like I say that every time, but I have like genuinely cried happy tears over our Patreons. Yes. So thank you.
I feel like we don't address it a lot, but like you should see our texts back and forth to one another whenever somebody new signs up for Patreon. I sent Katie a text and a screenshot and I'm like, we have a new Patreon. Oh my God.
And then
like,
we fangirl hard.
Yes. So hard. I mean, it's like really weird to us that y'all want to sit here and listen to us talk. So
when we first started this podcast, I was positive it was just going to be my mom who listened, and then she didn't.
Oh my God.
Mom, you have still yet to text me the code word. I'll give you another one. Cheese puffs. If you're listening, text me. But it's really amazing to get this support from people. You guys have no idea how much it means to us. So yes. Thank you.
It's been a really surreal experience. And like, okay. I want to bring up our milestone. We opened a freaking bank account.
Yeah, we did.
For the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. That did not seem like it was something that was going to come to fruition.
No, it really didn't. I mean, it really didn't.
It seemed like just a dream. So the fact that we just did that, especially at the beginning of the year, like we're super excited for what this next year is going
to
bring.
Yeah, I can't wait to order our merch from our bank account.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's big. I'm so excited. You guys are so great. I'm going to cry again if we don't move on. I'm so tired.
Let's get into the episode.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This next week's, plural, because this is a multi-parter. We're saying two parts now, but we all know who I am. It's possible that it's going to be three. Who knows?
I live for these.
We are talking about Marilyn Monroe.
Norma Jean.
Norma Jean Mortensen. She's one of the most famous women in history, and her story is constantly sensationalized.
Mm-hmm.
There are a ton of different reasons why that's the case, and we're going to kind of get into them. But I need to note up top here that I'm going to be following what researchers have been able to prove with records and, most importantly, logical theories based off of interviews from people who have nothing to gain from what they are saying.
We had this conversation the other night, and we want to do her justice. She's a fucking icon, and throughout her life and her death, she has been, God, I don't even have the words for just, she's been treated terribly.
Throughout her entire life and death, everyone who could grabbed and took everything they could from her. And used everything they could about her to lift themselves up. There are a lot of people who had a lot of things to say where they had a lot to gain from those things being true.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some people, a lot of people who had some things to say that had a lot to lose from what they were saying. And those, especially in this circumstance, are way more credible. But it's a complicated story.
She deserves to have this done right.
Mm-hmm.
First, we were only planning on this to be one episode, and then you texted me and said you were, 13 pages in, and you had just gotten to Joe DiMaggio?
So I started off, I was 9 pages in, I had just gotten to Joe DiMaggio. And then we decided to make it 2 episodes. And now it's 13 pages, 13 and a half pages. She hasn't even met Joe yet. So it's a lot. Without further ado, this is the story of a girl who dealt with immense trauma, mental health issues, abusive men, and crowds of people who wanted nothing more than to use Marilyn for everything that they could. First, we start with her early life. I'll be honest, I really expected you to start saying this is the story of a girl. I have a pause in it because I expected it so much.
This is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world.
And she fucking could have. And she could have. Born Norma Jean Mortensen, she was given the last name of her mom's husband. Her mom, Gladys, had been separated from Edward Mortensen, or Ed Mortensen, for months. He's not her biological dad, never raised her. It was just a name put on a birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
It's said that her biological father is a movie studio supervisor, Charles Stanley Gifford, which, as of 2022, it was proven with DNA that he was.
Oh, shit.
This is a pretty big deal because there are a few times where Marilyn, allegedly tried to reach out to him as an adult, and he was kind of a dick. And his son was like, no, my dad would never do that. She's not related to me in any way. So it's pretty big that it is now proven that this was, in fact, her dad.
I bet he feels like an idiot now.
Yeah. And what I'll say for now is that they never really had a relationship. Her mom, Gladys Baker, suffered immensely from schizophrenia. And Gladys's mom, Della, also suffered from what would, according to multiple sources, most likely be diagnosed as schizophrenia today.
Wow.
We're going to dive into Gladys a little bit and her backstory, because she really is an on-again, off-again character in Marilyn's life. But her story kind of landslides into Marilyn. Gladys was born May 27th, 1900, feels crazy to be saying, and raised in Los Angeles. She lived a rather transient lifestyle, moving over a dozen times due to her alcoholic father, Otis, being unable to keep a job. Otis dies at 41 and leaves Gladys and her brother, who's 5 years younger than her, to be raised by a single mom who married one other time for a short period and then began to date a series of characters, to put it nicely. Otis's death is weird. He died of general paresis, which usually occurs in people who have untreated syphilis for many years. It's a form of neurosyphilis.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Not knowing how to explain that to her kids, Della just told Gladys that her dad went mad and died. Which, he did, but he got sick and this happened. I feel like there could have been more. And that plays a big role. Just that plays a big role in Gladys's life.
Yeah.
Della, later, after a few years, this is a huge moment for Gladys. Della, her mom, banished her 11-year-old son because he was constantly in trouble at school and at home. He was just like a difficult kid.
God, I wonder why.
So she tossed all of his shit into a pillowcase and drove him down to San Diego to leave him with a cousin.
Whoa, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's traumatic as fuck.
Yeah. So it's 1916 and Gladys has been through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She meets a man people call Jasper. Jasper Baker is his last name. He's 12 years older than her and he asks for her hand in marriage.
How old was she?
16.
Oh, God.
The legal age to get married in California.
Ugh.
Yeah, sad that that comes back into play later, actually. So they have two kiddos, Jack and Bernice. It turns out Jasper was secretly super fucking abusive, and Gladys finally built up the courage to leave him. But because it was 1916, and this is the way that the world worked, he labeled her an unfit mother, took both of the kids, and moved to Kentucky.
Damn!
Right? Isn't that so she just lost both her kids.
What the
fuck? Yeah. She then later meets Edward Wharton, who's described as a, quote, tall, stable, and solid man, who really just wanted to focus on taking care of Gladys.
Mm-hmm.
But now, by the age of 24, it was really fucking clear that something was wrong.
Yeah.
Gladys, understandably, was having bouts of crying, depression, followed by bouts of euphoria, only to start the cycle all over again. After her marriage with Edward fell apart, she began a life similar to the one that Della lived post-divorce, which in 1916, 17, 18, was very frowned upon to be a promiscuous woman.
Yeah.
It's frowned upon now, but like that's how she was described. At one point in like later in life, Gladys is described as like a good time gal.
I actually hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that description so much.
Yeah. So that's kind of where she's at. She gets pregnant with Norma Jean by her superior, Charles Stanley Gifford, who denied his responsibility at the time because she had been, quote, with other men. June 13th, 1926, 26-year-old Gladys brought two-week-old daughter Norma Jean to the foster home of Ida and Wayne Boleander in Hawthorne, California. And, like, for realses, this really needed to happen. So she had two kids, and after that, Gladys was dealing with quote-unquote post-baby blues on top of a history of mental illness in her family.
Yeah.
Then she lost her kids and her husband, who was abusive. So she's dealing
just
with
a cocktail of bad things.
Yeah, and then she just had another baby and gave it up. So she was dealing with some incredibly large mental health issues. She had actually stabbed her roommate after a manic episode. She was grocery shopping and she came home and pulled a knife on her friend who was watching the baby and saying that Grace poisoned her, like poisoned the baby.
God.
So she stabbed her superficially, but like she stabbed her.
Holy shit. That is terrifying.
Yeah. It's pretty clear that most of the women in the family suffered from pretty intense mental health issues that often got chalked up to baby blues. During this, while Norma Jean is a baby, Gladys is living with her mom, Della, who is also spiraling.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Della claimed in the middle of the night that someone broke in and raped her. She accused the local butcher of putting shards of broken glass in her beef.
Whoa.
Her mom was Della, the grandma of Marilyn, mm-hmm. just all over the place. And Gladys, not doing great either. So Della was actually institutionalized in 1927 and she died 19 days later. So that's Marilyn Monroe's mom.
Okay.
So we're coming into the story. Norma Jean, little baby. She's 2 weeks old. She's dropped off at the Boleanders.
Mm-hmm.
These are the most stable years of her entire life. With them, 7 years total, she was well-adjusted. It was a strict home, and she lived with other foster kids there.
Okay.
The only living one in, like, the 2000s, Nancy, said that it was a loving home that was horribly sensationalized as terrible after Marilyn's death.
See, that's what it's stuff like that that I just can't get past. Like, please stop making up lies about her.
Yeah. It was a happy home filled with children. Norma Jean was very happy, said Nancy. It's important to note that some of this sensationalized stuff came from Marilyn herself, once famous, talking about her, quote, impoverished life growing up. But it was also that same Marilyn who said that her mother was dead when she was very much so alive and showing pictures of her coworkers saying, I'm Marilyn Monroe's mom. So yeah. It's some of the lines get fuzzy because Marilyn herself made them fuzzy, and it gets complicated. Norma Jean was there for the first 7 years of her life. But because Gladys started to make it clear when Norma Jean was seven that she intended on taking her back eventually, Ida wouldn't let Norma call her mama.
I feel like that's such a poor decision. Let her go back with her mom.
Not the first. Though Wayne Bullyander, Ida's husband, was called Daddy by Marilyn her entire life in like a strictly paternal way.
Thank you. Yeah.
Wayne was a mailman for 30 years and deeply loved being a father to every child that came through the home. During the Great Depression, due to financial reasons, families were often unable to care for their children and would have them dropped off in foster homes for short periods of time. So a lot of children were in and out.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day. That's crazy.
Yeah. So just a lot of kids constantly going in and out of the house. But there are five kids. Norma Jean was one of them. And Nancy, the one that I talked about earlier, were there pretty consistently. It's June of 1933, and Norma's having a hard time connecting with the kids at school. She's really shy and withdrawn. There are that sign and other signs as a kid that Norma Jean is heading down the same path of mental health struggles that many of her family dealt with in the past.
It makes sense for it to be genetic.
Yeah. Her best friend at the time was a dog named Tippy, who died after being struck by a car.
Oh my God, no.
After the dog passed, Ida picked the body out of the road and left it sort of off to the side in the driveway where Wayne could deal with it when he got home. But that's when Norma Jean unexpectedly came home and saw the body.
No.
Because the neighbors hated the dog, Norma Jean was convinced that the neighbors did it and was unconsolably upset, having a full mental breakdown at seven, and refused to accept the truth of what had happened because she had convinced herself that the neighbors had been plotting the dog's death for a long time. Whoa. And finally did it. Like extreme paranoid delusions for a seven-year-old to be having.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
She convinced herself of this so much that that's what she wrote as an adult in her memoir. Like that's how Tippy died. Her neighbors killed her dog.
How did we find out that that's not what happened?
Ida was like, no, the dog was hit by a car. Like I watched it. And Ida told Marilyn multiple times, like, no, the dog was hit by a car. And she was like, no, the neighbors cut him in half with a garden hoe.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like just fully convinced of it. Ida was really concerned by this outburst and other issues that were going on with Norma. This had become something that was becoming more and more common. And Ida's horrible thought process was, let's just combine the sad thing of her dog dying and her leaving our house and going back with her mom so that it's just like one, it's just a lot of bad all at once. So that maybe when she's
poor choice making
older, it'll be like, okay, because it's all bad. I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't like rip the Band-Aid off kind of thinking.
Like if we're going to traumatize them, just do it all just at once.
All the trauma at once and then no more.
My God.
So Ida called up Gladys and said she's very upset and needs her mother. The next day, she turned to Norma Jean and said, your mother is coming to pick you up. You're going home now. And Norma Jean's response was, but I am home.
No.
Because she had been there since she was 2 weeks old and was now seven. Oh, and Ida responded back with, that's right. And you can come back anytime you want. Because Ida did genuinely love this little girl that she had raised.
Yeah.
So Gladys pulls up and honks the horn for seven-year-old Norma Jean to come out.
Mm. It's like whoever picks up my neighbor's kid in the morning for school.
Yeah.
Annoying.
Yeah. Doesn't even like go out to grab her daughter to take her home after her being in a foster house for 7 years.
Wow.
So Norma moves in with Gladys and Grace, the friend that she stabbed.
Stop. Are you serious?
Yeah. Yep.
She went back to live with that woman.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. If I were the friend, I would not let her back in.
I would not be her friend anymore, let alone her roommate.
And it's like one thing to understand that, you know, someone has mental health issues, but like if they're clearly a threat to your safety.
She stabbed
you. Why would you let them live with you again?
Yeah. Grace and Gladys work together at the movies as cutters of film negatives, and they also live together. And again, this is the friend that she stabbed. I genuinely don't know if this is a history would call them roommates situation. They were living in a really small apartment together, and Grace had marriages on and off again. She was like twice divorced at this point.
Okay.
But these two women were essentially strangers to Norma and could tell that Norma Jean was miserable, because it's not like you can do anything to really hide that at 7.
Yeah.
So their solution was to not let Norma Jean see the Bullianders at all, assuming like a clean cut would make it easier.
Damn.
Yeah.
Just traumatize her more. That's the only family she actually knows.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's fucked up.
And while this is happening, Gladys's mental health is spiraling.
I'm sure.
They're on some hard times. So G and G are like, all right, we're going to put Norma back into foster care because...
I'm sorry for the delayed reaction. Oh my God.
Griffins and gargoyles.
Griffins and gargoyles.
They're like, all right, things aren't great, so we're going to put Norma Jean back in foster care, but not with the Bullianders, because she liked them too much and wouldn't want to come back to us. So she was moved in with a family called the Atkinsons. Who are the fuck are these people? That's an excellent question. These are just some English small-time bit actors in films.
What?
I genuinely no fucking idea.
They're not even like actual foster parents. They're just other people that they know, actors.
They might have been like legitimate foster parents, but like they don't know if they're not like foster parent friends or like friends of the family, you know. They're just like, here's more strangers for you to go live with.
Please go live with these weird people that you don't know.
So she had just adjusted to like living with her mom, and now her mom is like, all right, you're gonna go live with these people. So she's living with George and Maude, and then Grace and Gladys buy a house in Hollywood with 2 stories and 3 rooms. The Atkinsons are having money struggles, so they move in to the house with Gladys and Grace. So now it's G and G and the Atkinsons and Norma Jean kid.
Wow.
Kid Norma Jean.
Can we just say that I love the name Maude?
It's pretty solid. George and Maude. It's pretty great. As heard in the Mystery of Marilyn Monroe, The Unheard Tapes, she said that she was sexually abused as a child. And she spoke about her experience of being abused by a lodger to her biographers, Ben Hecht in 1953 to 1954 and Morris Zolotow in 1960.
Whoa.
TBS News says, quote, she first encountered sexual abuse at the age of 8 in one of the boarding houses that she spent time in. People who are meant to care for her or protect her have also abused her, including her cousin and the boyfriend of one of her close family friends when she was a child.
Oh my God.
So there's like, sources were like, from August of buying a house to October, things were going okay. But then there are other sources saying that she was 8 when she was sexually abused, and that that is the age that she consistently said it was happening. Uh-huh. And this is where she was living when she was 8.
Okay. So we're thinking that it was somebody residing in the house.
Yeah. And some people later point to, like, the Atkinsons potentially abusing her.
Not George and Maude.
Potentially George.
Oh, no.
Was he the person in the boarding house that abused her?
Or were they, like, renting a room to someone who abused her?
Yeah. So it felt important to mention because she's 8 in the story and that is the age. So.
Okay.
Now, Norma Jean enrolls in 2nd grade. She's so fucking young, man. She's so young. And it's now when Gladys receives news that her son, the one that Jasper had taken, died. essentially at the fault of Jasper's shitty care.
Ah, Jesus.
He was in a rehabilitation center that Jasper took him out of against the advice of doctors.
Oh.
And then there was some sort of incident with a firework where the kid lost an eye. And wow. Then he had kidney failure.
What?
I know, Choopy. Really bad parenting. After that, Gladys is not doing good. Her firstborn, her only son, had just died. Then she gets news about her grandfather saying that her grandfather had taken in his own life. And her cousin goes on and on and on about how he had gone mad and then killed himself.
Oh,
so
boy.
Gladys spent her entire life believing that both of her parents went mad and then died, which kind of should have come with a big caveat about her dad that she never really got. But now we add this idea that her grandfather also went mad and died. When we add that to the fact that she had been hearing voices on and off again her entire life and was questioning her own sanity, this was like the, it, she broke.
Yeah.
Gladys.
I mean, how broke. Much can someone handle, you know?
Yeah. The voices that she were hearing her whole life were back and worse than ever. And then she stabbed her friend. I'll never recover, like, from the friend living with her that she stabbed. Like, she's really not doing good. Grace and the Atkinsons are terrified of Gladys. Grace is quoted saying, "It's as if a light went out in her. From that time on, she was in total darkness."
Oh, God. For someone hearing voices, that is not
good. Not good. Not good. At the request of Grace, Ida calls to talk to Norma Jean and ends up asking Norma if she wants to come back.
Oh, thank God.
Norma Jean was like, "Yeah, but I have to ask Aunt Grace," who then freaked out on Ida and said, "I didn't think you were going to try and take her away from us again. I just wanted you to call her and tell her that you loved her."
It's not taking. She asked.
And
Norma wants to go.
Yeah. Like, she wants to go. It's like she didn't know that was an option. And she was like, yeah, let me just go ask Aunt Grace. So with the incredible medical care that existed in the early months of 1934, it was said, diagnosed that Gladys was going insane and nothing could be done. Very soon after that, her diagnosis of insanity, she suffered a full-on just psychotic break and is having a shaking fit on the couch, like lying on her back, having a shaking fit, screaming that the people coming down the stairs are going to murder her. When there's like, there's no one on the stairs.
Yeah.
So the police are involved and
she's terrible.
Committed to the state institution indefinitely and diagnosed as schizophrenic.
Wow.
What's to happen to young Norma Jean? Grace becomes her legal guardian, but Norma Jean continues to live with the Atkinsons for the rest of the year.
So where does Grace go?
She is like on and off getting married and
she's in and out
a little bit. The Atkinsons are kind of the
great caregiver.
Excellent. Excellent. The Atkinsons are the one who like really introduced her to films, but it was Grace who encouraged her that she could one day be a star.
Mm.
Grace insisted that there was something about Norma Jean that would just like, she just had it. And what we would call that now is X Factor. Like that thing that someone that just makes them a star.
That star power.
Yes. Grace instilled this belief that she could be a star into Norma Jean herself and hyped her up on this idea. Then, one day at 9 in the fall of 1935, Grace brings young Norma Jean to the Los Angeles Orphans Home Society.
Aww.
No one really knows the exact reason why. Some people attribute it to the fact that she had just lost her job. Mm-hmm. Grace had loved Norma Jean, had goals for her, no children of her own, and no ability to have them, and a clear desire to be a mom. But what other people think it really came down to was that Grace was on her fourth marriage to a man, Irvin Sullivan Goddard, nicknamed Doc, with three kids, an amateur inventor with not a lot of money coming in.
Mm.
So to the orphanage Norma Jean went.
Why would she not just bring Norma to Ida?
Ida caught word of this and called up Grace and begged to take Marilyn.
Ugh.
Begged her. But she wouldn't give Norma Jean back to Ida. because Grace had promised Gladys to not let Norma go back, because if she did, they would never see her again.
What the fuck? You're not even around.
Let's listen to the woman who's just diagnosed with schizophrenic, having paranoid delusions, who stabbed you.
Still can't get past that.
Why are we listening to her paranoid delusions about the only person who ever consistently took care of Norma Jean?
Yes. Why?
So we put her in a fucking orphanage? How is that better?
Traumatize the kid even more.
She was there for a year and a half. She developed extreme night terrors and insomnia, a stutter, and deep confidence issues.
Wow, I didn't know that she had a stutter.
Oh, yeah. A hardcore stutter that took her a lot to get rid of. Due to all of this shit with everyone just passing her around. And the fact that no one at school wanted to befriend the kid in the orphanage.
Oh, God.
So,
as an adopted kid, I feel you, Marilyn. Kids were mean as fuck about that.
So cruel. She was bouncing around from foster families because a lot of families got a stipend for foster kids, like $25 a week from the government or from the parents.
25 was a lot back then.
It's a lot. But none of them could commit to keeping her for more than a few months and eventually would just send her back to the orphanage again. This is where we get the super cool quote from TBS News again. Quote, even a foster parent had sexually abused her after taking her behind a barn when she was only 11 years old, as reported by the Daily Mail. Things are not going good. They're so, so bad. So this is her childhood. She's 11 years old. She spent the first 7 years of her life and was ripped away to be bouncing around from people who are abusing her, on top of fucking horrible, horrible history of mental health. Like, this is the cards that this girl is dealt with. Jeez. And she's 11. So Grace eventually tries to move Norma Jean in with her and Doc, but Doc is a creepy asshole who makes Norma Jean super uncomfortable, and he's a dick to Grace about it, to the point where after 6 months, it's just better if Norma Jean goes back to the orphanage.
Just give her to Ida.
Just give her. Right? So again, Norma's jumping around from foster families to the orphanage to foster families, where Grace finally gets Norma Jean's aunt, Olive Monroe, to take her in. Mm-hmm. The family was on rough times, so it was pretty big that they took her in, but Norma Jean felt as though she was treated like an outsider amongst her cousins. The shining light of 1938 was Norma Jean finding out for the first time that her mom had children before her and that her half-sister was still alive. This revelation was huge. And they did connect because Gladys is, like, trying to escape the institution and she's, like, contacting Jasper. And the way they connect is crazy, and it does actually involve Gladys escaping from the mental institution by dressing as a nurse for a little bit.
Oh, shit.
But it brings a person into Norma Jean's life for the first time. So they're, like, writing letters, immediately signing it like, your sister. And Bernice is, like, an important person throughout Marilyn's entire life. Mm-hmm. She's, I think, 7 years older.
Okay.
Because Norma Jean is 12 and Bernice is 19.
Okay.
Like, she's got an older sister now.
Yeah.
Like, so just amazing. So that happens. And then again, another just, like, stroke of good luck. She moves in with Grace's aunt, a financially secured divorced woman who's, like, into Christian Science stuff. But, like, we don't need to talk about that. Anna. Anna was a huge asset to young Norma Jean, who would quickly start calling her Aunt Anna. She would dress her up in fancy clothes and take her around with Grace to the different movie studios where they used to work and just, like, talk about all of the fabulousness, and would constantly tell her, like, don't care about what other people think about you. You're so beautiful on the inside and outside, and you have no reason to feel anything less.
Oh, my God.
And would, like, take her aside every day to just, like, positively love her.
That's amazing.
And having Anna around, her confidence soared, which meant that in school, her popularity soared. Mm. Unfortunately, after 2 years, Anna's health declined.
No.
And Marilyn had to go back to living with Grace and her husband, the Goddards. Fortunately, though, Anna moved out of where she was living and mm-hmm. the Goddards moved in. So she didn't have to, like, change locations.
Yeah, she didn't have to be displaced.
Like, Anna, once again, was like, you know what? I'm going to try really hard to, like, make this easy for you.
Oh.
Like, such an amazing fucking person.
Yes. What a great role model to have.
Truly. Truly. And it is a big attestment, like, that Grace did everything she could to not put her back in the orphanage. Like, she got mm-hmm. her to the Monroes, and then she got her to her aunt. Like, she didn't want her to have to live there.
Yeah.
So because she was doing so well at school, they didn't want to have to move her out of it. But the issue of getting to and from school arose. So Grace had arranged for her old neighbor's son, Jim, to help make transportation easier.
Okay.
He agreed, even though he was 5 years older than Marilyn, and was like, her and her friends like giggle and it's annoying.
Yeah.
Grace saw this as an opportunity to set the two of them up.
Oh, Jesus. Why did I know it was going to get weird?
Of course. Then her husband, Doc, got a job on the East Coast and they had to move to Virginia, and he didn't want Norma Jean to come with them.
Oh, man, that's fucked up.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Fuck that guy. Norma Jean had two options. At almost 16, the legal age to marry in California, she could go back to the orphanage or marry Jimmy Daugherty.
Well, we know how that went.
They get married. And Norma drops out of high school to focus on being a wife. Because no matter what she was doing, she gave it her fucking all. Always. And she did go on to deeply regret dropping out and, you know, went on to kind of pursue an attempts of filling in those educational gaps. But like, I want to stress that this wasn't like her giving up on her education just to be a wife. Like, she was like, you know what? If I'm going to do it, I'm going to fucking do it. And that's a respectable thing. So they settled into a 4-bedroom house in Van Nuys, California. And this is the first home that Norma Jean had a say in being a part of and a say in making hers. It's a big deal. She was excited to have her home.
I'm sorry. Can you tell me the guy's name again? Her husband's name?
Jim Daugherty.
Jim Daugherty. How does she know him?
She's the neighbor who was driving her to and from school.
Oh, that's the neighbor?
Guy. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Grace got her way.
Yep. Yep. And he was like, fine. But yeah, he eventually joined the Merchant Marines and was stationed in Catalina, which brought what was the quote from one of the sources? It was like, Marilyn was well liked there with her big smile and tiny bathing suits.
Oh, Jesus. Come on.
Because she was so beautiful.
Yes, she was.
So beautiful. So she gets a job assembling drones the army uses target practice, where one day in 1944, the military was like there and wanting to take photos for training purposes. Mm-hmm. And there she was, just a gorgeous girl amongst a sea of everyone who's dressed alike, and she just stands out in every way. So she takes some pictures, and after that, the photographer asks if she would be interested in modeling for him outside of the factory job, and not in like a creepy way, in like a very like legitimate big break way.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to make that clear.
Thank God.
Because if that happened now, it's terrifying. But back then, it was a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
She was thrilled. And only after a little bit, she was able to quit her job at the factory and was modeling as a full-time career.
Oh, wow.
Jim fucking hated it.
Damn. Damn, bro. Just be happy for your partner.
He didn't look at her like a partner. Ugh. You can only have one career. And that's being a wife. And a woman can't be in two places at once.
This is a quote from him.
Mm-hmm. She's given a pretty hardcore ultimatum. And Marilyn responds very simply. She moves out and into Aunt Anna's house again, continuing her modeling career.
Nice.
It's at this point where she does start confiding in photographers and the people around her about her random sadness and fits of extreme emotions, something that her grandmother and mother both dealt with and called the doldrums. She at one point in time said to a photographer that people liked her because, quote, "I was the kind of girl they found dead in a hall bedroom with a bottle of pills in their hand."
Whoa. Okay, but like, looking at the way that some of society has spoken of her, like, she's not wrong.
She's not wrong, because she even said, the thing when you're young and depressed is on Monday, you can go to bed wanting to kill yourself, and on Tuesday, wake up and be ready for the day.
That's so real.
And that's where she's at in her, yeah. And she's expressing to people that she's experiencing these highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
So... oh, yeah. So just a little tidbit. At this point, Gladys gets out of the mental institution in 1945.
Gets out or breaks out?
Gets out.
Okay.
She like tricks them into letting her out. And she's living with Norma Jean at Aunt Anna's house. So that's a struggle.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
Now we're going to kind of get into the rise to stardom. Gladys kind of fades out of the picture. She gets married to a bigamist and things aren't great between them, but she's like an on and off person who is a big source of stress for Marilyn. And one of the letters that Marilyn kept from her mom was basically her mom yelling at her through a letter because she felt like she only had her daughter's hate and not her daughter's love. Like, just like a real source of stress for her, sadly.
That's so terrible. But also, when you said the mother yelling through a letter, I just imagined Mrs. Weasley.
Oh my God.
Through that letter, Ron.
Basically that.
Basically that.
When historians say that Marilyn Monroe rose to stardom overnight, they mean almost literally. She immediately joined a model agency. And at their advice, she straightened her hair and straightened and bleached her curly brunette hair to platinum blonde. The next year, she was on the cover of 33 magazines.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And she hadn't been living with Jim. They're not divorced yet, though. And he is like, you know what? Me or the career. Here's the big ultimatum. But this was not a hard choice for Norma Jean. First of all, it's not like she married him for love. He was away for months at a time. He was super controlling. And the agency that she was working with told her that they preferred to work with unmarried women because if you're married, what if you get pregnant? What if your husband wants you to stop? Basically, AKA, we can't fuck you or control you if you have another man who already is,
mm-hmm.
is what they meant, really.
Yeah.
And she wanted to be an actress. So she said, bye, and divorced her first husband.
She's like, fuck this shit, I'm out.
I'm out.
Out.
So it's 1946. She's divorced. She wants to be an actress. So the modeling agency arranges a screen test with 20th Century Fox. And during that screen test, she's told, like, she's on a set and it's like executing simple moves, like sit on a stool, walk across the stage, do this thing. And the quote from that is, this girl had something that I hadn't seen since the silent pictures. She was showing us that she could show emotions. After being asked to do another screen test on color, she was signed on for a 6-month contract where she made $75 a week, whether or not she worked.
Oh.
It wasn't a huge contract, but it was something.
It was something. It was a start.
Before the contract could be finalized, she's called into an executive's office. They have an issue with her name. So the name Marilyn is picked out by the Fox executive because of a Broadway actress, Marilyn Miller, whom Norma Jean reminded him of. And she's able to pick out the last name Monroe and picked that because it's her mother's family name. This name change, like, really solidified a character that she had been building over the years.
Mm-hmm.
One time, Marilyn, as Norma Jean, is, like, talking to Aunt Anna, and she's expressing the fear that she's like, what if I can't act? What if I can only do pictures? What if I'm just a model? And Anna replies with, don't kid yourself, darling. You've been acting your whole life. You know what I mean.
Shit.
She put on a character of someone who's not a lonely, insomniac, night terror, depressed, ridden child in high school.
She was masking hardcore.
Hard. She even had a different walk that she did when she was Marilyn. One of her best friends was talking about being out shopping with her one time when Norma Jean looked over at her and goes, do you want to see me be her? And at first her friend didn't know what she meant, but then she just like switched into this character where she walked differently and like carried herself so differently that now everyone around her started recognizing her. Like, that is how different Norma Jean and Marilyn Monroe were. I don't think genuinely that there was a real Marilyn Monroe. It was always who Norma Jean was pretending she was. So Marilyn Monroe, the name, the star, is born. She finally moves out of her Aunt Anna's house and into her own apartment. In 1947, she shot a couple of movies, and the biz is like trying to get her name out there. So they send a bio to the press, and her biography says that she's an orphan who was discovered babysitting an executive's kid. Like, that's the storyline that the world is originally presented with, which is not true. She's not an orphan. Her mom is alive and living with Aunt Anna.
Yeah, she was just living in orphanages because all those people sucked.
Yeah. And she wasn't discovered babysitting an executive's kid. She was a, you know, it's not true, but like a great story. And it's shit like this that makes it even harder for biographers post-mortem to get to the truth, because constantly so much bullshit was spread.
Yeah. I can totally see the 21st century Fox execs like telling her to tell a story about her origins.
They wrote the bio and sent that out. That was like the story they wanted to sell. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, August of 1947, Fox decides to not renew her contract.
Damn.
And during this time, a few friends report some really concerning instances.
Okay.
She's claiming to be seeing people watching her from her window.
Oh.
She's on the third floor.
Oh, no.
She's constantly calling her friends and crying. She's got really manic up and down behavior to the point where she like has to go stay with friends for a little while. Things are really not good. And we're just kind of seeing all these signs throughout different parts in her life where she's not using drugs at this point. And she's not doing the things that, you know, these are real signs that her mental health is really starting to crumble a little bit. Marilyn is eventually signed by Columbia Pictures in March of 1948 for the starring role of something known as Ladies of the Chorus, which unfortunately Ooh. Didn't do much for her career.
Oh.
And then Aunt Anna passed away.
No.
Yeah. So she's struggling. She's really, really struggling. Fortunately, she has her career with Columbia to kind of push herself into. Mm-hmm. And she starts working with a drama coach, Natasha Lettesse, who was definitely in love with Marilyn, like for sure.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 35 at the time, she was a strong, brilliant teacher, but also kind of a hard ass. She's a figure in Marilyn's life for at least the next 6 years. She's a person for Marilyn to lean on. Unfortunately, days before her contract is up with Columbia, Henry Cohn, one of the top people, asks her to, quote, go with him alone on an overnight cruise on his yacht.
No.
Where she politely declines. And as she's walking out, he screams, what makes you so special?
Damn, bitch.
Yeah, everything makes her so special. The next day, her contract is not renewed.
Wow. God, he sounds like he has such small dick energy.
Sex was how roles were. It's unfortunately how it was done.
Yeah.
The whole industry has small dick energy. 1948, it's September, and she's turning back to modeling to support herself. She also moves into a boarding house where she starts renting a room for $12 a day to save money. She absolutely fucking hated it because it reminded her of the orphanage. That December, at a New Year's party, Marilyn meets John Hyde, a 52-year-old talent agent who ended up taking her on as a client and eventually leaving his wife for Marilyn.
Oh.
He represented so many huge actresses of the past who owe their entire careers to Hyde. And he also represented people like Bob Hope, just like big fucking names at the time. And he was completely devoted to Marilyn.
As he should be.
As he should be. It's during this time that Marilyn, between jobs, posed for the famous nude photos taken of her.
Mm.
She was paid $50 to pose completely nude. She mm-hmm. signed the photos as Mona Monroe, as many studios had modesty clauses at the time, and she didn't mm-hmm. want to jeopardize any future jobs. The photos made their way into a 1951 calendar, and in 1952, Monroe was becoming much more well-known, and the photos were re-released during one of her shoots, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. asshole Hugh Hefner purchases the photos for $500, and he debuts Playboy with her image on the cover. The issue sold 50,000 copies instantly.
He literally launched his entire career.
Yep.
Off the back of her hard work, and she got nothing.
Nothing. Instead of denying the photos, Monroe owned up to them in an interview with a reporter, saying she had to do what she had to do, and the public forgave her, with the whole affair only increasing her appeal. At first, the studios really, really wanted her to deny them, though, but she firmly held the belief, it's my body and I'll do what I want with it. I won't be ashamed, not of any single part.
Yes, yes. Honey.
Back to when she first meets Hyde. So it's like the 1948, 1949, she meets Hyde. She literally meets him December 31st, 1948. Hyde used his influence to help Monroe land roles in The Asphalt Jungle and All About Eve. The Asphalt Jungle was a huge break for Marilyn and required a scene where she had to like break down in fear and start crying on command. So Hyde really wanted her and Natasha to work together on those scenes because it's a big step. One night, Natasha comes over to work on it, and Marilyn talks about hearing voices. Like, throughout it, she, like, stops the rehearsing and is, like, talking about voices and asking Natasha if she hears them. Natasha does not. She also tells Natasha about different people, eyes, and men that she's seeing in her window watching her. By the end of the session, Natasha deeply feels that Marilyn is like genuinely on her way to an emotional breakdown. So she meets with Hyde, who she really didn't even like all of that much anyway, because Hyde and Marilyn did have a sexual relationship, and told him that she was worried about Marilyn and that she's hearing voices. And Hyde responded as if he like already kind of knew that, decided that the best thing to do was introduce her to the world of barbiturates.
Oh, wow.
Which he and genuinely the rest of the world like didn't think there were consequences to. They're like, oh, like these are just fine. So yeah. Johnny starts going to the studio doctors and they start prescribing Marilyn meds on the regular. And they do help short term with the anxiety and the voices. He also arranged, according to multiple sources, to have a slight nose job and her chin slightly surgically adjusted.
Oh.
So in 2015, Vanity Fair journalist Julie Miller writes, quote, "The Beverly Hills-based auction house, Julianne's, will sell off the late actress's medical records from 1950 to 1962.
Oh.
In a transaction expected to net between $15,000 and $30,000.
Okay, you know.
It's really fucked up. That's those really are her medical records. This is
someone's medical records. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Why are you making a profit off of that?
The package includes x-rays of Monroe's frontal facial bones and nasal bones taken after a late night fall in June 1962, 2 months before her death. At the time, a radiologist noted that there is no damage to her nose, although Reuters reports that a recent medical evaluation solicited by the auction house reveals a small fracture at the tip, where Beverly Hills plastic surgeon Norman Leaf wrote in his memoir that the icon had a slight rhinoplasty. Records from Beverly Hills plastic surgeon Michael Gurdon appear to confirm that Monroe did have a chin implant, as has been speculated over the years. In his notes, Gurdon referred to a 1950 cartilage implant in Monroe's chin, which he wrote began to dissolve, a discovery he apparently made after the actress complained of a chin deformity.
Oh.
I mean, get plastic surgery, who fucking cares? Whatever. So as I said, Marilyn and Hyde did have a sexual relationship. Marilyn was genuinely attracted to him. He was the first person who took her acting and her as a person seriously.
Okay.
To everyone else, she was a dumb, sexy blonde. And he never treated her like that.
She's not even blonde.
No. And he encouraged her to dig deeper into her craft through reading the classics and plays. Like, he genuinely was like, she has no limits.
Yeah.
Like, the quote that she said was, "He not only knew me, he knew Norma Jean too. He knew all the pain and all the desperate things in me. When he put his arms around me and said he loved me, I knew it was true. Nobody had ever loved me like that."
Oh my God.
He fed her appetite for knowledge and never judged her for anything, and like constantly just hyped her up. He was also loaded financially and insisted that he support her while she focuses on her career. Mm-hmm. After he had left his wife, he moved her into the new home that he bought. He helped her enroll in a 10-week lecture at a local college to like expand her horizons.
Wow.
He really did a lot for her.
He really did want the best for her.
Yeah. In 1950, he brought minor roles in 6 films where she stole the scenes and got a new contract with 20th Century Fox, one which Hyde played a huge role in negotiating. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, just days after that, Johnny died of a heart attack at 55.
No!
It didn't come as a huge surprise because he did have declining health and a heart condition that required him to see a doctor like once a week.
When does everybody who's good to her die?
Marilyn was told that before he died, he cried out for her. Marilyn. Marilyn.
My God.
Marilyn did genuinely care for him. And it's said by witnesses that after rushing to the hospital after he passed, Marilyn held his body and cried, repeatedly saying, "Johnny, I did love you. I did."
You're making me cry right now.
I know, I'm about to cry. Another quote, "Johnny was good to me. He made me feel as though I wasn't stupid like people thought. I loved Johnny very much. Kind of different, maybe, but a lot. No one will ever completely take his place."
How could they?
They couldn't. After the burial service, Marilyn stayed at his grave for hours. She stayed there so long that someone who worked for the gravesite had to tell her that it was getting late and she should leave.
I'd be like, "No thanks, I'm gonna sleep here."
She blamed herself for her death because she, like, refused to marry him.
Oh, for his death?
Yeah. And she, like, felt like it was her fault that his heart failed.
Oh, no, girl. He had a heart condition.
I know.
It's so hard to, like, not internalize that, though.
Yeah. It's that night that Marilyn self-administers an overdose and brings her close to death's door. This would be the first of 4 known overdoses, with the 4th being the one that ended her life. Her acting coach, Natasha, comes home and sees Marilyn passed out with so many pills that some are still formed in her mouth completely. She's able to shake Marilyn awake and bring her to the hospital where her stomach is pumped. Marilyn insisted later that she didn't try to kill herself, but it's difficult to judge considering the sheer amount of pills that she had taken and the immense loss that she had just suffered. So that is where we stop for today.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize that we're an hour and 12 minutes into this. I am riveted.
Her story only goes up from here. But, you know, we try and keep our episodes around an hour. JFK went 2 hours. I am totally starting to lose my voice right now, though. But there's at least another 17 pages of notes to get into.
I think in this part one, dude, you have done an incredible job at keeping it factual and keeping it real and just, like, doing her justice.
I looked over and I have a copy of the Andy Warhol Marilyn Monroe it's on a book cover that's just like looking at me right now. She was so incredible and she did so many things that we'll get into, but I felt like I really needed to talk about her childhood and I really needed to talk about her family because the shit that she went through is out of control and the cards that she were given, rough hand to be dealt. And as you said, everyone that she loved is taken from her.
Yes. Like, what the fuck? It's so unfair.
It's so unfair. Like, she lost Anna and Johnny so fucking close to each other.
Yeah, that fucked me up.
It's devastating. So next week, we will get on to the next part of our beloved Marilyn's life. She was too good for JFK. Yes. Anyway, yes, we will get into that. Her and the Kennedys and all of that stuff. I just need to throw this out there. This is what we're going to end on. If you see any source of information about Marilyn Monroe that talks about the quote unquote fact that after JFK's birthday, she went and fucked JFK. And when he was done with her, she went and fucked his brother, immediately throw that away. That is not true. That never fucking happened. Don't trust any source that says that. That's not fucking true.
Oh my God. Thank you for saying that.
It is disgusting the amount of times I saw that story repeated. She is not some fucking sex toy that was passed around by the Kennedys. Fuck the Netflix movie Blonde. We'll get into that too. But like, please vet your sources for everything, but especially with Marilyn Monroe, because holy fucking shit. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. I love you all. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes. Bye.
Bye-bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.